And welcome to Pet Safety Crusader Radio. I'm Denise Fleck, and I am the Pet Safety Crusader. I founded my animal educational company, Sunny Dog, Inc. with a K, 16 years ago to help people help their pets. And you know what? I think I have. Having taught more than 10,000 pet lovers animal life-saving skills and millions more on national television segments, I've come to find out that there are still so many dogs and cats out there who could benefit from their humans learning better pet parenting skills. So I've now donned my mask and cape, and I travel far and wide teaching humans how they can help their dogs and cats live longer, happier, healthier lives by their side. We all know our animals don't live as long as we do, and gosh darn it, we sure wish they lived longer. The only way I've been able to reconcile myself with their short lives over the years is that it does, in fact, allow us to love so many more of them during our lifetime. As the Pet Safety Crusader, it is my mission to be the one who makes a difference in the lives of animals and the people who love them. Most of us haven't had the opportunity to take a Pet Parenting 101 class. And no matter how possum you already are at taking care of your furry family members, there is always more to discover. So I hope that each week you will sit, stay, or just keep on driving, working, or doing whatever it is you're doing, but you will tune in at 1 p.m. Thursdays Pacific and join me for an episode of Pet Safety Crusader Radio where you can listen, learn, share, and be the person your dog or cat knows you can be. I must tell you, it's just positively great to have you listening today. And some of you may know this, but each May is proclaimed National Pet Disaster Preparedness Month. So May is a possum time to dust off your pet's disaster preparedness kit and make sure that everything is in perfect order. What? You don't have a pet disaster preparedness kit, evacuation and recovery plan? Well, you're in the right place. We'll fix that, or at least get started on that, in the last segment of today's show and in the several weeks to come during May. So please stay tuned. But I just can't emphasize enough the need for having systems, rules, procedures in place. It's what keeps us on track and helps us be the best we can for ourselves and the animals in our lives. I teach high school animal care, and I start off each semester where I have to go over the rules and procedures. And, you know, to 16 and 17-year-olds, there's just a lot of rolling of the eyes and sighing over, you know, what they can and cannot do. But that is life. If we don't stop at a stop sign or a red light, we're going to have a problem when we're out there on the road. So in every aspect of our life, whether it's for us humans or for our four-legged friends, we have to have set some boundaries, to have some rules, so that we all know what we're doing and that we're prepared with that plan B when the worst happens. As the Pet Safety Crusader, I like kicking off each of my talks with my doggone good-to-know rules that are perfectly wonderful for cat parents, too. I wish I could roll my R's. It's something I've never been able to do, but kitty people, do it in your heads for me. Perfectly wonderful. They really can make a difference in the lives of our furry family members if we follow these rules, or let's just call them tips so it doesn't sound like such a command. But I like to give you some commands as far as the health and safety of your pets because I think it's really important and it makes us better people because we all know our pets bring so much to our lives. Before I dive into these tips today, and you know, as the weeks go by, each time we're going to cover one of them at length, I just want to mention something that I go over in all of my pet first aid classes, my high school classes, anytime I talk. It's called zoonosis, or the zoonotic diseases. And if we all search back in our brain to our days of biology, we probably remember zoonotics as the study of diseases that pass between species. What we're talking about here is diseases we can get from our cats and dogs. And number one, obviously, is rabies. It's something we've learned about. So, you know, those are diseases I always have to go over in a pet first aid situation just to teach people to be safe. And there's so many others that we'll cover in episodes to come, Giardia and ringworm and a whole bunch of them. But although there are diseases we can get from our pets, in the last several years, a new word has recently been coined called zooeia. Z-O-O-E-Y-I-A. It's actually kind of doggone fun to say, zooeia. And it's the inverse of zoonotic diseases. What zooeia is about is the scientific research that proves pets improve our lives. And I'll bet most of you out there listening already know this. You didn't need scientific proof. But we now have it. For years, we've been talking about how pets lower our stress and our blood pressure. But they've actually, you know, proved this in hospital studies. Having a dog gets you up off the couch and off your behind and out walking that dog. So it prevents us from being lazy, and we actually may get more exercise. Many people have actually kicked the habit of smoking because we have come to discover that the secondhand smoke can be equally bad for our cats and dogs. People who live alone, especially the elderly, but others who, you know, live alone, and if they have a pet, it requires them to get outside to meet other people. And there's nothing like walking a dog that's a babe magnet to bring somebody to you and, you know, make new acquaintances of the humankind. So there are just so very many things animals do to improve our lives. They've discovered that children that bond with an animal actually become more empathetic human beings. And also by living with pets, we often build up our immune systems and have less health issues such as asthma and eczema. So having an animal is just such an amazing thing in our life, and I hope you'll reach out and scratch behind the ears or give a belly rub or even a hug. I know in the latest news they're talking about dogs not liking hugs. So the key here is know your pet. Know what he likes and is comfortable with, read those signals, and, you know, act accordingly. So let's talk a little bit about my doggone good-to-know rules before we get to our guest speaker today. The first one is to know pet first aid so that you can help before veterinary care is available, and make sure you have the directions in your head to your nearest animal ER. I'm going to really encourage you in the next week to drive to your nearest animal emergency center. You don't have to bring coffee and donuts and go in and meet everybody and become a best friend, although that's not a bad idea. But the idea is if you suddenly have a dog who isn't breathing or a cat who's bleeding, you don't want to be looking up directions or getting out the GPS. You want to be able to go on autopilot and know if it's on the right side of the street or the left side of the street, where the entrance is, especially if you have a large dog you're going to need help carrying. You want to know how they accept payment and what services they offer, because if they don't have the antivenin for the rattlesnake bite, you should have gone 10 or 15 minutes in the opposite direction to a different animal ER that does. So what I often say about my pet first aid classes is that I don't teach yoga or meditation. I am not going to get you in a zen zone. But what I do to do to release some of your anxiety and panic is walk you through scenarios and give you homework like I'm going to be doing on each Pet Safety Crusader radio show. And that way you'll have things ready and in place. So you can guess this first bit of homework today is going to be to go find your nearest animal ER. And if you hike with your dog, you might need to know where a different one is closest to that hiking location, because that's most likely where your pet might cut his paw or get a bee sting or a snake bite, and you might have to run for veterinary help. Remember, the thing about pet first aid is it's not a replacement for competent veterinary care. It's what you do before you get to the veterinarian, which can truly make a difference in the life of your pet by lowering his pain, preventing further injury, and in worst-case scenario, truly saving his life by being the pump his heart can't be for whatever reason at that moment in time, if you can administer cardiopulmonary cerebral resuscitation. And I will tell you, I have had students who have done it successfully and truly been a hero to their pet. So our first doggone good to know rule is to know pet first aid, know that emergency animal ER, and to have a disaster preparedness plan for all family members, two-legged, four-pawed, feathered, finned, and scaled. It doesn't do our animal friends any good to have their pet disaster kits in place if we haven't thought about taking care of ourselves as well. You know, when you get on a plane, you always get the little demonstration about when the oxygen masks come down to make sure you put on yours before you put it on a child or help anyone else. So the same thing, and we're going to be talking about this more today, make sure you have your human kits ready as well. Rule or tip number two is to perform a weekly wag-to-woof checkup of your pet. Some of you may know this is a head-to-tail, and I promise you in a future episode we will go over this in detail. But you guys can start today. Just really get to know your pet from head to tail. Feel for any of those idiosyncrasies that he may have. Notice if he has any lumps or bumps. Some may be a scar from a spay or a neuter or other surgery. Sometimes it might be just a wart or a tag as they're getting older. Maybe it's a sebaceous cyst or a lump that's just filled with fat or other innocuous fluids. But we always want to find out. I must tell you, my own youngest son, Haiku, the Chiquita. Haiku is part Akita, part Chow. That is why I call him Akita, a Chiquita. Just the other day, I was giving him the once-over, and I did feel a raised area on his chest. With all of his fur, it did take me some time to actually locate what was there, but it was the blackest spot I have ever seen. So we did go into our veterinarian, to our expert, and she's taken a biopsy of it. So you can imagine me. I'm paranoid dog mom here, but I'm staying calm for my kids' sake. And we're waiting for those results as we speak, hoping that, you know, it's no big deal, that it was just some kind of benign growth. But you never know. And if it's some sort of hemangiosarcoma, that's something that can metastasize to the different organs. So you don't want to wait. Feel your pets over. Look them over from head to tail. And, you know, if your pet isn't used to the human touch, start slowly. But it's so imperative he lets you touch him everywhere. Because if every time you go to touch your pet's paws or behind his ears or even his belly, he pulls away or he grimaces or growls in any manner, well, then you're going to never know if anything's sore. Because the unfortunate part about having pets in our lives, if there is any unfortunate part, is that we don't share a common language. Sure, we tune in and we do the best we can, but dogs and cats, especially being pack animals, often try to hide injury or illness from us and don't let us know when something is wrong. So by doing this woof-to-wag checkup, it is our way of paying due diligence to them and being able to speak up for them when we notice something isn't quite right. So do that. Look them over from head to tail, and along with that, pay attention to their habits. Notice how often you have to fill up that water bowl or how much they're eating. You know, you measure that out. So it's great that we can do our best to keep our pets at a healthy weight. But if they're suddenly not eating as much or they're craving more, or especially on the drinking front, if they're drinking a lot more and it isn't 110 degrees outside, what is increasing their thirst? Very often, it can be a kidney issue, and that is something that requires veterinary attention to find out. So pay attention to that. Especially if they're drinking more, you want to make sure they're asking to go out or that they're scratching in that litter box a lot more. Because if they're consuming more liquids and not getting rid of them, we have a problem. Also pay attention to what your dog or cat looks like when they sit or stand or get up or get down. Just like some people notice how their car sits on the road. Notice it with your pet. Are they leaning to one side? Is one leg cocked out to the side? As your dog is standing, is his hindquarters starting to sag? Look at your pet with a fresh pair of eyeballs every week so that you notice those subtle changes and you can get something fixed quickly when it isn't quite right before it becomes a nightmare. Number three on my doggone good-to-know tips is to never, ever, ever skip your veterinary visits, including wellness exams, spay, neuter, and emergency care. And please, please, please make sure pets are up to date on all vaccines or titers. Yes, that's something we're going to discuss in many episodes. A titer test is simply a blood test That is truly the only way to prove if an animal is immune to a specific disease. Along with this, don't forget to keep up on licensing and microchips. Make sure they're registered and that if you change your cell phone number or you move, you inform the company so that you and your pet can be reunited. Number four is to make training, socialization, proper exercise, and nutrition a daily habit. Five, spend quality time daily with your four-legged family members. And six, pay your pet's unconditional love forward by giving back to help another to help another. Maybe you can volunteer at a shelter, donate money, time, supplies, whatever it is you have. Often giving of yourself is most valuable. Saving an animal or improving his life won't change the world, but it will change the world for that one animal. So in other words, like the Pet Safety Crusader herself, be the one who makes a difference. We're going to discuss a portion of rule number two, that whole disaster preparedness, later on in today's show. But let's take a quick break, and when we return, my awesome possum speaking partner, Deborah Hamilton, will be joining us. So sit, stay, and get ready to learn.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
Now that you're back, I'm pleased to bark out loud and introduce you to my friend and colleague, Deborah Hamilton. Deborah has spent 30 years as a practicing litigator, but she is now a full-time mediator and conflict coach for people in disputes over animals. She has far-reaching experience in resolving interpersonal conflicts involving animals and speaks widely on the topic of how mediation techniques can help people address conflicts without going to court. Deborah has presented at veterinary schools and all kinds of animal interest groups, as well as at the American Kennel Club, the American Veterinary Medical Law Association, the Society of Animal Welfare Administrators, and State Bar Association Animal Law Committee meeting. But today, she is here on Pet Safety Crusader Radio, talking to you about having that conversation instead of heading to the courtroom for your pet's sake. Hello, my friend Deborah.
Hey, Denise, how are you? How's beautiful California today?
It is warm and sunny. Where do you happen to be today?
Well, I'm in New York right now, and it is just beautiful here and about 70 degrees, so we're loving it.
Wonderful. Well, I want to talk a lot about your book, Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt today. Catchy title. But I know in it you refer to the Hatfields and the McCoys. And those family names just automatically churn up an image in most heads. So can you talk a little bit about what can happen over animals, what kind of disputes happen, and literally define for our listeners exactly what mediation is and how it can help?
Well, probably the best way to start is to define mediation first. So mediation is the process by which people voluntarily agree to have a conversation with each other when they're having a disagreement. It's used in divorce, it's used in employment law, it's used in contract law. So it is a process that enables people to sit down and tell their story. it is a confidential process, so whatever you say there can't be used against you if, in fact, it doesn't work and you go to trial later. However, it enables you, as I said before, to tell your story so somebody actually hears you and puts you in a place where, hey, they get it. The mediator is going to get the way you speak and how you feel about this conflict. And it's amazing how, as we all know, if someone says to you, Denise, I understand how you feel. That really made you angry. You decompress. You go, yeah, thanks, because nobody has respected how I felt. So when you have a disagreement or a misunderstanding about an animal in divorce, in landlord-tenant with your veterinarian, if you call a litigation attorney, they're going to say, well, let's swear out a complaint against them and let's sue them, and you're going to spend thousands of dollars. If you go to a mediator, they're going to say, okay, let's sit down and have a conversation confidentially and have you tell them your story and have them tell you their story. 9 times out of 10, in my experience for the past 6 years that I've been simply mediating and not litigating anymore, there was a miscommunication or a drop or some unheard statement or some summation or assumption that was made that was incorrect that was corrected, and the people actually not only resolved the conflict that they were having with their veterinarian or with their spouse over divorce and the pet, but retained their relationship, which
wow,
for me,
Deborah.
Sorry.
No. I was just going to say, this sounds so civil.
Well, that's why I do it, because the last 2 or 3 litigations I had, we won, and I was really thrilled because I made a lot of money, because as a litigator, you make a lot of money if you take something to court and you hang it out there for a long time and negotiate, and usually they negotiate on the courtroom steps. However, you are billing hours. I felt so bad for the last 2 or 3 clients I had because we won, but they lost a relationship that was a long-time relationship, and it cost them a lot of money. I said, there's got to be a better way, which was why I started probably the only practice in the country that addresses conflicts between people over animals in mediation first. You can always sue, and that's what I always tell my clients. It's a win-win. And if you don't win or you don't feel like you've won, you can always sue. It's not like you can't. So I always try to say to them, this is where you get to address the people in a way that they hear you. And the mediator will hold that safe space. And that's what I do. And I love it because it keeps everyone focused on what's in the best interest of the animal, which is why they came to you in the first place. But when you start to get egos in the way, the attorney's ego, the pet owner's ego on both sides, the animal sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. What's best for the animal? I always say to people who are divorcing, the animal, they just wrote an article in Bloomberg about this, and they quoted me and put it in bold. I was really thrilled. Unfortunately, the animal doesn't dislike your ex. And if, in fact, something happened to you, the animal would choose your ex over a stranger. So why wouldn't you think about making sure that the animal keeps the people in their life they love?
Oh, such an important comment, and you know, you and I are all about the animals, but this sounds like such a way to reconnect with humans because, you know, nowadays we text or we email, we don't have the conversation as much, and we're getting more and more away from this, so you're really bringing us back to it, and it can make a difference.
It really does, and the good thing about mediation is that I can do it nationwide and internationally. I actually have video conferencing, and I always thought at the beginning when we did video conferencing, if somebody pissed somebody off, they'd hang up, but they don't because they really want to get to tell their story. And since I've made them feel so comfortable before we get there, even if things are difficult to hear, they stay because they want to say their piece. And it is amazing how after everyone really listens and I reflect back what they've said so that someone else can hear it, I know if I'm mad at Denise, I'm not going to listen to what she has to say. But if the mediator says it in a different way, I'll hear it, and it'll register. And we get to a place where, oh, my God, I have totally misunderstood how you felt or how you approached something, or you totally misunderstood me and that's not what I meant. And this makes it so much easier for the pet to be the main focus of the solution.
Got it. Well, and you said that so clearly, but maybe you can paint a picture. Can you mentioned an ex, and you know how the pet would prefer to go with an ex as opposed to a perfect stranger. So do you have a story you can share, with not naming the names, but just to kind of illustrate how this can work?
Well, I have a wonderful couple, and actually one of the parties was interviewed, so I don't feel too bad about using their scenario because she was interviewed on television here on the East Coast, and she said that they were stealing the dog back and forth from each other, and they really just loved the dog, but they couldn't speak to each other. The breakup was so terrible, they couldn't speak to each other. And after about 6 months of me contacting her and me contacting her ex, we were able to have a conversation via video, and they were actually able to establish a relationship over this dog that made a huge difference in the dog's life. The dog now is shared, and they both feel as if they've come so far. They thanked me so much, and they said, we never thought we would ever talk to each other again. But because you made it about the dog and not about us, we are really able to understand what it means to think about the best interest of the dog. And by the way, Denise, I don't know if your listeners know, but in court, a dog is a chair. So you don't have the best interest of the dog that the judge can even address, because their property, under the law, their property. And even if the judge might be an animal lover and want to do the best thing for the animal, he might not be able to, because the laws of that state aren't going to support him in making those differences and those changes.
Well, that's just such an important thing to bring up, because I'm sure children in divorce situations, you know, don't understand what's going on, and they go through the ringer. And sometimes, you know, they live with the pain and the agony of that for a lifetime. But, you know, at least most of them, when they become adults, they probably understand, hopefully not from having the situation happen to them, but they can understand, you know, what happened. But our pets never really understand why their mom or their dad suddenly has disappeared.
Right. So, if you're on vacation, and you go on vacation, you'd really like your pet to go to someone they love. I actually had another client who they wanted 50% of the dog because their attorney told them they deserve 50% of the dog. And I said to them, okay, so let's look at that. And when we did the number crunching and we did the time the person had to stay with the dog, they realized that even though they might be eligible to get 50% of the dog, they couldn't really take the dog 50% of the time, and the dog would be happier with the other spouse for most of the time, and they would get the dog one or two weekends a month, and they would get the dog on vacation, and that made the dog have the best of both worlds.
Wow. What a difference that can make in the life of an animal who makes such a difference in our lives.
Absolutely.
I want to actually go to section two of your book, and let me let listeners know that your book is entitled Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt, How to Use Mediation to Resolve Conflicts Over Animals. Being this is Pet Disaster Preparedness Month, as you and I both know, Deborah, I want to pull from this section because you have a whole section called Stop, Drop, and Roll, which most often people relate to, you know, what they're supposed to do if there's a fire. What do these words have to do with animals and mediation?
Well, I put that in there so people who are in conflict over animals, when they come to one of my courses or they read my book, it pops in their brain. All of us know what stop, drop, and roll means. It means if you're on fire, don't go running willy-nilly through the house. You know that, Denise, because you teach such wonderful courses on pet care and what to do if your pet gets injured. Well, when you're in conflict and someone is speaking to you in a really mean or horrible way, you feel like you're on fire. So I always say stop talking and listen. Drop the need to be right, which is almost impossible, but if you're right second, that doesn't make you wrong.
But she's saying, you know, that we need to stop and listen and drop the notion of being right. Oh, my gosh, how hard is that? You know, when we all have an opinion or we have a strong emotion, it's really, really difficult to, drop what we're saying and, you know, listen to what somebody else has to say. But that's what this mediation is all about. It's taking that time to listen to somebody else so that you can hear their side of the story and validate their feelings. There's nothing worse than being ignored or having somebody or feeling like, you know, somebody isn't listening to what you have to say. So it's really, really important that we are there for the person and hear their issue regarding the animal. Hopefully we'll get Deborah back soon. But in the meantime, I do want to let you know that her website is www.hamiltonlawandmediation.com, and the book is Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt,
through with stop, I think, and drop means to drop the need to be right, because being right second is doesn't make you wrong. And the last one is let it roll off your back, because, you know, they want you to roll around when you're on fire, but rather let it roll off your back, because if you let what someone says to you that's so egregious roll off your back, after they calm down, they often come back and apologize to you because you didn't add fuel to the fire. So that's what I teach, and most of the people who go to my courses tell me when they're in the middle of an argument, they remember those three words and practice it, and it makes it easy. You know that, Denise, from what you teach. You teach simple things that are easy to remember.
Wow. And, you know, and I was, while you were away for that brief moment, which, you know, could qualify as pet disaster emergency there, because here I am on my first radio show and my guest disappears. Ha ha. I was going over the drop part and how hard that is for us, because, you know, especially issues with animals are so emotional. For us to drop and listen, you know, to somebody else. And I would imagine that kind of thing would happen very often to a veterinarian, because the veterinarian knows what the situation is with the pet, but it's, you know, very hard for them to hold their tongue.
I have to tell you, that is the hardest thing. And I usually say to my veterinarians when I speak at veterinary conferences and at veterinarians in schools, I sit there and go, you know, I'm a lawyer, and I know the right answer all the time. However, it makes so much more sense to listen to what someone else is saying and appreciate what it is that they're bringing to the table, their understanding of the situation. Because if you appreciate how someone else feels about it, right, wrong, or indifferent, it doesn't mean you agree. I always tell my students, appreciate only has three things in common with agree, and those are three letters, A, R, and E. So if we appreciate how someone else feels, we are going to figure out and agree later on. But if we don't appreciate, we're never going to agree.
What a great thing to remember. And we can take this, you know, to all facets of our life, not just with dealing with animal conflicts, but any kind of people-to-people conflict. It's just so important that we take the time to listen.
Listening really can end a lot of discord, listening.
Absolutely. You mentioned students. Where can somebody be a student? Where can they come hear you speak or talk or hear more about that before we even talk about your book?
Well, this time I'm going to be in the Atlantic Coast Vet Conference in October. I'm going to be at the Association of Professional Dog Trainers Conference. I'm going to be at AVMA. I'm almost all over the world. If you go to my website, all of our dates are up where I'm going to be. I try to also put webinars on my website, and if you sign up for my mailing list, you're going to find all the webinars that I have. You and I, Denise, have done several webinars together, because we are really passionate about helping people take good care of their pets, whether there's a conflict or a disaster, because it really is important to make sure that you make a plan.
And it's all about planning, because if you plan to fail, or if you fail to plan, I almost got that backwards. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So where can we buy Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt?
Well, you can go on my website and click through to Amazon.com. You can go directly to Amazon.com. It comes up immediately if you put in Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt. You don't even have to remember the part that says how to use mediation to resolve conflicts over animals. I have to say that Temple Grandin corrected my cover, because my cover used to say how to resolve conflicts using mediation involving animals, and she said to me, she also wrote on the back an endorsement. She said, just use over. Involving is too long. And, you know, she's right. It's been a phenomenal success. So many people have written to me and thanked me for giving them the ability to use these steps to resolve conflicts with the neighbor and the barking dog. It's all the way to divorce, all the way to biting dogs. I just actually gave a course to someone about how to resolve a conflict involving a biting dog that doesn't necessarily go to court if you can manage to mediate and figure out how to resolve it.
Wow, and I know that's a lot of people's nightmares, because most of the time when an animal bites, not always, but most of the time it's a human has somehow set him up for disaster. They didn't pay attention to those warning signs, didn't do the training or socialization to begin with. But, you know, life happens, and, you know, it's just heartbreaking to think that, you know, our precious family member now may be confiscated or worse because something like that has happened and, you know, it wasn't totally his fault. So it's amazing that you can do these things to help.
It's all about creating an atmosphere where discussion can be had. What happens is knee-jerk reaction. There's the laws that you have to follow, absolutely. But if you can get everyone together and have a conversation, most of the time, I know you know this, Denise, but most of the time people just don't want it to ever happen again. So what can I do as the pet owner to make sure it doesn't happen again? And what can I do as the person who might have been the victim of a dog being frightened or scared or just not being very well trained? How can I feel that I've been compensated? So it's all about having that conversation.
Right, and that compensation, like you mentioned, in a court of law, animal's property, he's like a chair. So if we can find a different solution, I know you've shared before about a case, it may have been the same one, but where the family divorced and they kind of worked it out so that at the end of the week, the one spouse would take the dog to doggy daycare and then the other spouse would pick the dog up from doggy daycare. So they never had to really see each other, but they both still got to see the dog and the dog got the benefits of both worlds.
It is a cottage industry now. So if you're in a big city, often the doggy daycares, the dog walkers, the groomers will act as the conduit through which people can exchange their dogs. And if, in fact, it's funny, someone said to me, well, how do you enforce mediation? Well, if I feel really heard, respected, and understood, you won't have to enforce it because I will understand that this is the deal I made. I made the deal that I would leave the dog at the groomer on Friday and pick it up on Monday, and you understood that that's what you would do. And so both of us have skin in the game, so to speak, that we want to maintain this agreement because we want to keep the dog in our life.
All right. Well, Deborah, it is always a delight chatting with you, my friend. And everybody out there, please go to HamiltonLawAndMediation.com to learn more about all of the amazing things Deborah does. And via her website or Amazon, please check out Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt. And Deborah, closing words, why do they need to read this book?
Because they will make their lives so much easier if conflicts arise over animals.
Awesome. We'll be back after this quick break.
Hey, everybody. This is your new friend, Julio. And I'm talking to you because I like to listen to BBSRadio.com. I sneak over the border every day, and I go see my girlfriend. She got a computer. Come on now. Sing it, girls.
Wagging my tail over being back with you, and I'm eager to talk pet disaster preparedness, but I can't encourage you enough to run, not walk, to Amazon or to HamiltonLawAndMediation.com and get your copy of Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt. I must tell you, like I mentioned in closing out that segment, though, reading it, I really found great ways to work on my interpersonal relationship with humans, even when it doesn't have to deal with a dog issue. So Deborah has some great words of wisdom in there, and hopefully it will help a canine or feline friend in your life at some point in time. So please pick up a copy. Now, as I said at the top of the hour, May is considered National Pet Disaster Preparedness Month. And whether the wind blows, the ground shakes, the flames rise, or snow and water fall from the skies, you, Y-O-U, must be prepared for your pet's sake. Disasters actually don't even need to be on a regional scale. Power could go out on your street or in your building. A tree can fall on your roof, or a water pipe could break. I'm a great example of this, as I have no landline or internet today. So, you know, that in itself, although it's not a huge disaster, it's a big inconvenience. So even without all of the neighbors on your street being in distress, your household filled with just two or four-legged, feathered, thinned, and scaled family members could be in that distress. Think about it. If the power goes out and you don't have electricity, refrigerated food does that. So if you have canned or wet food for your dog or cat or feed a raw diet, that becomes a huge problem. I must tell you, I do feed my dogs, my two Akitas, a raw diet in the evening, but I will always feed them kibble in the morning. They actually get kibble, non-fat yogurt, and blueberries because I want their systems to always be able to handle that kibble should we be in a disaster, should we be on the road, or in some other situation in which I don't have refrigeration to keep their food at its best. If you're without electricity and you have fish, aquarium pumps and filters won't run, and your fishies could die. So, you know, that's definitely an emergency, and you need a backup plan. Climate control also becomes a problem in many parts of the country at various times of the year. Either it's too hot or too cold. And even though our pets are animals, we're animals too. And it's just like if it's too hot for us to walk barefoot on the sidewalk, it's too hot for Fido's paws to walk on that sidewalk. The same thing, if it's too cold for us to be outside, it's too cold for our dogs and cats to be outside. So, you know, in some instances when we're having extreme weather, if we're without power, that could be problematic to our pets as well. Again, on an individual basis, if we have a flooded basement, that brings disease and dampness and ruin. While fire can cause the ultimate destruction, and it doesn't have to be a wildfire in a region like we're unfortunately experiencing in Canada right now, Fort McMurray, but it can be, you know, just on your street or just your house. So when disaster strikes, it's up to you to allow it to become a life and death situation or just a major inconvenience. Our pets need us to be prepared, and training, equipment, and attitude are the three things I single out that can truly make a difference. According to statistics, 10 to 15% of humans react appropriately when an emergency happens. Are you in that group? Are you in the other 85 to 90% who do not? Something to think about today, and it doesn't mean you can't change which group you're in, and that's why I'm here. It's up to you. And in the face of adversity, your most powerful tools are threefold, in my opinion. The first one being readiness, meaning training and supplies. Number two, PMA, positive mental attitude. And number three is your propensity for curiosity, the idea of keeping on learning, which can help you through so many situations. So let me break down some of these a little bit today. Like I said, over the next several weeks, we're going to go into these in a lot more detail, but I want to talk to you a little bit about readiness, your training and supplies. You need to know what to do and how to do it so that you can survive most situations. I'm going to go over with you next week my paw preparedness kit, all the things you should have for your pet when an emergency happens. And a lot of you can think of many of these things, including, you know, food and medical supplies, harnesses, collars and leashes, disposable litter boxes, litter and scoop for kitties, and, you know, special needs for any other species you may have. But there are some things you may not have thought of, and I'm going to throw one right out today so that you're prepared next week when we talk about it. And it's in a waterproof baggie or some sort of container, pictures of your pet and pictures of your pet with you. Sure, we're going to have medical records and other things there that we want and we want to keep dry. And a lot of you may say, well, I've got those on my phone. But there have been instances, even during Katrina, where cell phones weren't working. So there's nothing like having that hard copy photograph that shows you and your pet belong together. Should your pet go missing, you have a great photo to very quickly make a flyer to post around to help, you know, relocate him and reunite the two of you. If you go to a shelter, it's proof that you and your pet belong together if it's a picture of your pet and a picture of your pet with you. The other key to this photo, besides making sure it's a current photo, some of you may have a gorgeous black lab puppy, but do realize 7, 8, 9 years from now, that black lab puppy will be a distinguished-looking adult or senior and may have a bit of a frosted face. So as the years go by, make sure you update that picture and have one that truly reflects your pet at the time. But the other part of that equation is certain pets, you need to take photographs from various sides. They have unusual markings, and a photograph of those markings can be a fingerprint of that pet. My Akita Bonsai actually is white with the ragged black spots, and on one side, the big black spot looks like a kidney bean, and on the other side, an upside-down heart. So those are just, you know, great photos for me to have to prove that that is my dog, my best friend. So we're going to go over, you know, more of the supplies next time, but of course, I'm going to always be talking to you about the training part of the readiness, and that is to know pet first aid and CPCR, as well as other animal care courses you can take along the way, and survival courses for humans and things, just so that you're prepared when something does happen. Sure, you can have a great handbook by your side, but when that emergency happens to your precious best friend, you want to be able to go on autopilot as much as you can and actually get the task accomplished. I will say over the 16 years I have been teaching pet first aid and CPR classes, I've had so many students jump to the task and really make a difference in the life of an animal. And a lot of people ahead of time during the class go, I wonder if I'm going to remember this when something happens. Well, most of the time, they really, really do, and they solve the problem for the pet. Now, that isn't to say once the pet's taken care of and delivered to veterinary care or the situation has played itself out and the animal's doing fine, that the human doesn't go in the corner and have a little meltdown. We're passionate. We care about these animals. We're holding these emotions. So sometimes there is that need to let it go. But I have found that most people that do actually go through training, actually show up in a class, are prepared and can go on autopilot and get the job done when needed. So readiness, meaning your training and supplies, are so very, very important. The number two most powerful tool you can have in the face of adversity is a positive mental attitude. And doggone it, this is just something that cannot be taught. It must come from within. So it's something you need to work on yourself. And I think one of the ways you can gain a positive mental attitude is by gaining the confidence you need by acquiring the necessary tools and skills as far as your readiness program. So if you, you know, have everything in place for all the humans and all of the animals, if you have an evacuation plan and you've practiced it regularly, and, you know, if you know what to do when the worst happens, maybe you can really prevent the worst from happening. So work on your positive mental attitude. I know it's something that makes us a better human being in all aspects of life, and it's not really anything that can be taught from one person to another, but I think by gaining knowledge and increasing your confidence, you can increase your positive mental attitude because you will know what you're going to do, and you will always have a plan in place. And last but not least, and probably the one that strikes you all most oddly, but I think a very powerful tool is to stay curious. When something pops up in your head or comes across a page that you don't know, check it out. Or at least make, you know, a list of things you need to research when you have time to do so. Have you ever seen your dog tilt his head to hear more closely or try to understand what you're saying? I actually have a very funny story where I was having breakfast with my dog trainer and my veterinarian, and I ordered, of all things, an iced coffee, and the waiter came back to the table saying, "So sorry, we're all out," as I could see other waiters pouring coffee at the table. Well, oddly, the dog trainer, the veterinarian, and the pet first aid instructor all did that little that head tilt to the left, looking at him quizzically like, well, get some ice and pour some hot coffee in it, and we have hot, you know, we have our iced coffee. So our dogs do that. They're curious. They're trying to understand what we're saying. And whenever we get to one of those moments where we're not understanding, it's so important we take that time out to learn even a small little bite of information, because it can vastly increase our skill set and knowledge over time. An example I always like to give, and I'll use it as a brain teaser right now, is how many ways can you think of using a simple item such as a paperclip? Let me give you 10 seconds here to think about it. Dun, 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 and so on. Did you come up with anything? Well, if you haven't, you can take a paper clip and you can unfold it and you can scratch your name into something. You can bend it and use it as a hook to attach something to something else. You can poke a hole in an object. You can clean out the nozzle on a spray bottle. I already said I think you can make a hook. You can hang something. It could be like a Christmas tree ornament you can hang up. You can make little paint dots. You can pit a cherry. You can write in cement. You could even, if you're clever enough, make a compass or a sundial. You can fix eyeglasses with, you know, tightening the little screw with it. You can stiffen the stem on a flower. The list is endless, and that's what I'm just thinking of off the top of my head here as I stare into space right now. So the more you think about things in advance, the better your recall is going to be when you need to jump to a task, and you can do the best with what you have at hand. Because whether it's pet first aid or pet disaster preparedness, sometimes all you can do is the best you can with what you have at hand. And by increasing your skill set, you'll be amazed that you have more things at hand that you can help a pet and yourself with. So in closing today, I want to thank you so doggone much for allowing me to help you help your pet. My pack and I have our paws and fingers crossed that you and yours will stay safe, healthy, and happy, and I personally challenge you to do your best to be a superhero in the life of an animal. I look forward to seeing you next time. This is the Pet Safety Crusader signing off and wishing you a bow-wow wonderful day.